I'm Frank Vaughn. It's April 3rd, 2026, and after a lengthy conversation with Grok last night, Grok seems convinced that I've been deboosted on X, and also posits that the same thing is happening on YouTube, only since I started criticizing or attempting to tell the truth about the Israeli-American war in Iran. We're also not partners on YouTube, so I think we're encountering problems there as well, because most of the people who are critical of the war have much larger follower counts and are also partners. But we continue, and I want to continue first today with good news coming out of Canada. Alberta separatists say they have 177,000 signatures they need to force independence referendum. They actually say they're in excess of that. The National Post, of course, engineers a headline to downplay the exact true numbers. And I hope the independence referendum appears in October. I've said long that this thing needs to move quick, very quickly, because the window of opportunity is not open forever. I'm worried, though, and this is the thing that's going to have to happen leading up to the referendum, is that you have to make the case to the Alberta public. You have to convince a large segment of Calgary and Edmonton that it's in their best interests to vote this way. It's going to be a lot of headwinds. You're going to be fighting Daniel Smith. You're going to be fighting Pierre Poilievre. You're going to be fighting the federal government, Mark Carney. You're going to be fighting everybody every step of the way, and the First Nations, not necessarily the people, but the bands themselves that benefit the most from the Indian Act. You're going to be fighting them as well. And even if you get it over the finish line, you're going to be fighting federalism. You're going to be fighting the court system. You're going to be fighting your own provincial government. And I hope you do. I hope the independence referendum passes with a firm yes vote, because at least it might put pressure on the federal government to actually do something about the endemic unfairness of this federation, which cripples the West and hobbles the West and robs the West of its treasure and sends it back east to fund all the socialism. Which brings me to another point. I don't understand why Canadians coast to coast are so resistant to the idea that Canada needs an upgrade. We're an old, archaic system. We're not a very representative system. We have a House of Commons, sure, that we vote for, but I've highlighted on this channel before that it's more or less just a rubber stamping body. Once the Prime Minister is ensconced with his cabinet, he can send them all home via prorogation for as long as he wants and rule by edict through the Governor General's office. I don't understand why we don't want to do better. I don't understand why political parties don't create with their platforms the energy to try and propose solutions that would enhance the power of the public, who is forced to pay for it all through things like the right of recall, through direct plebiscites or referendums on different issues. If your politicians don't want to actually take up your causes, there should be a mechanism where the people can actually get things proposed and put on the ballot like they have in the United States, and specifically to the United States. Though I have been reminded a lot recently of how much I hate everything that I hate about the American empire and the way that it works in the world, it doesn't change that the Constitution is better. It doesn't change that their system of government is much better. And if the Americans were to actually focus on rebuilding their country and focus on Fortress North America and the Don Rowe Doctrine and the hemisphere, how wonderfully rich they could become, and how every citizen would be far more empowered under the U.S. Constitution than they will ever be under this thing known as the Confederation, which we all live in here in Canada. Why do people not want to do better? The headline on screen is, if court halts separatist referendum bid, they'll push Daniel Smith to approve it anyway. Petition drive threatens First Nation treaty rights, according to an injunction application to be heard April 7th. Now, the bands, they're fighting this. They're fighting the referendum. They're fighting the concept of even having a vote, because they really love the money that comes from Ottawa. That's really what it's all about. Money that doesn't filter down to the people. The people who live on this leased land, these reserves, as I've said before, are leased from the crown. They don't actually own anything. They never get to own a house. They never get to own their property. They get all of these tax breaks, which everybody is familiar with. They get these couple thousand, $3,000 a month per family. But in trade for the tax breaks and in trade for the free money, they never get to own anything. and they never get to leave the reserve. The Indian Act is a prison system. It's not good for the people who live on the reserves, but the bands love it because it's good for the bands. Why Canada resists actually modernizing and actually doing the right thing? Like, what kind of a country are we that doesn't build pipelines, that doesn't develop its resources, let alone doesn't manufacture the things that we consume? We don't like pipelines. We don't like coal. We don't like energy. We fight it every step of the way. Saskatchewan and Alberta would like to prosper. We would like to have an energy economy. And we don't have it because of this loyalty to Ottawa and this loyalty to the system, which every single premier is addicted to, including Scott Moe. He was recently said in November that Carney is somebody we can work with. Is he? We're not actually building anything. We're not getting our product to market. And right now, well, the American empire is trying to bury itself in the Zagros Mountains like every other empire in the world has ever known, if people read history books. We stand in a position that if we had the infrastructure built, we could really take advantage of the times. Remember when Justin Trudeau and his government said there's no real market for liquid natural gas? We could be getting rich now if over the last 10 years we actually behaved like a serious country and strengthened ourselves, but we denuded our military, we denuded our energy systems, we dedicated ourselves to this net zero nonsense, and so we're not in a position to take advantage. And we haven't broke ground on anything. Remember that memorandum of understanding, all the SEALs were applauding, Daniel Smith and Mark Carney, as they were glad-handing and touching each other and getting real friendly over the memorandum of understanding? Has it led to anything? Will it ever lead to anything? My answer's always been no. But all that being said, the people who are working extra hard to get this independence referendum off the ground, those are the real patriots. They're doing really good work, and I wouldn't want to discourage them from doing it. I think it's necessary. Talking about the headwinds is just being realistic. It's a first step in a long-term fight. But this is another interesting one. Remember I talked about how the Carney government didn't campaign on immigration reform? They didn't really talk about immigration much at all. They hinted at it here and there around the edges. But the fact is, the Canadian population has fallen since they've taken office as they work to kick out temporary foreign visa holders. And they're even looking at canceling permanent residency. Canada's Bill C-12 has flown way under the radar. No one's really talking about it. You have to go to Al Jazeera to find out about it. And of course, their spin on it is an attack on refugee and migrant rights. But this is coming from the Liberal government. This is not coming from the Conservative Party, and this is going to tighten things up. Human rights groups in Canada have condemned a new federal law that they say marks a significant attack on refugee and migrant rights. And without getting into the details, they're going to make sure that the requirements for refugee status are tighter, and they're going to create a mechanism. They include a new rule that will bar asylum seekers from getting a full hearing at an independent tribunal that adjudicates refugee claims if they make their applications more than 1 year after they first entered Canada. Instead, affected applicants would have to access to what's known as a pre-removal risk assessment, a process the rights groups say grant refugee claimants fewer protections and is wholly inadequate. Bill C-12 also grants the government the power to cancel immigration documents, including permanent and temporary resident visas and work or study permits, if it deems it's in the public interest to do so. They're clamping down. They talked about building houses. The whole campaign was built on a bunch of lies that were designed by the big red machine to dupe the Canadian public into voting for the Liberals. And they know that they can now rule as they see fit, and their support base will not erode. Because look at the NDP. I may have made jokes on April 1st, but if you watched any of the clips that came out of that NDP convention, they're nothing but a gong show of mental illness. That's all the NDP is. They will never be an effective opposition because that's where all the crazies go. And those Liberal voters who are convinced the Liberal Party should rule from now until forever, doesn't matter that the government of Justin Trudeau survives to this day just under a different man. And doesn't that tell you something? Mark Carney comes in. He's parachuted back in from New York. He comes back into the country. He becomes leader of the Liberal Party. He becomes prime minister, duly elected prime minister after a process. The government underneath him is the same government, but this one man alone has completely changed directions on many files. and the Liberal Party just goes along. We are essentially a one-person state. The government is ruled by the prime minister and his cabinet. Parliament can be dispensed with, and they do as they see fit. And they don't even have to tell you what they're going to do. They're reducing the population of Canada. They're taking away a chunk of the immigration. They're giving themselves the power to cancel permanent residency. I see this as good news. And if the conservatives did it, the media would be up in arms, but the media is not saying anything about it. The same thing is beginning to not just be talked about, but actively implemented in Europe. The headline on screen is, "The era of deportations has begun. European Parliament backs remigration efforts in major victory for the European right." They're acknowledging the fact that crime, violent crime, sexual crime, is through the roof. And it's largely being conducted by those migrant populations that arrived over the last decade and a half into Europe. They're also understanding that it undermines their national stability, and that this idea that you could bring people in from other places in the world who have grown up in a completely different cultural environment, completely different moral environment, that you could just bring them in and they would fill all those labor gaps, and you could give them some pamphlets, and you could expose them to liberal society, and they would just automatically adapt and come to love it. This isn't an attack on all immigration. There's some fine people out there. I've met many of them. But some people coming from different cultures come here with a preset to be inclined to just take advantage and give nothing back. Europe is figuring this out, and I believe the Liberal government knows this as well. And they are concerned with the long-term stability of their plans, which is why they're reducing the population. And they're kicking people out. They're kicking hundreds of thousands of people out. And CBC says nothing about it. Only the Liberals could get away with this. It's wild to see. When it comes to judicial reform, the Liberals have picked up a lot of what the Conservative Party was talking about during the election cycle. When it comes to immigration reform, the conservatives are actually being critical of what the liberals are doing. The conservatives are actually more dovish on immigration. Remember, we just went through 10 years of everybody that talked about the problems of the immigration system, the problems of mass immigration, being called a racist, bigot, misogynist, sexist, insert your epithet into the equation. I don't care what the name is. But now the liberals are again in power under a different leader. Look at these polling numbers. Now, people want to call this fake. Maybe it's padded a little bit, but when you have this kind of a lead, you don't need to pad anything anymore. Leisure is not exactly known for padding their numbers. They're one of the more accurate pollsters here in Canada. They got the Liberals at 48, the CPC at 34, and the NDP predictably at 6, because let's face it, they're crazy. Avi Lewis might try to put a sane face on it, but if you watch the gong show of the convention, there's just nothing there anymore. What was the NDP under Jack Layton has been thoroughly and totally destroyed, first a little bit by Mulcair, and then a lot of bit by Singh, and what's left is just the crazies. The headline on screen is, "Ken Starmer's 40 Nation Coalition Open the Strait of Hormuz." Canada is part of this 40 Nation Coalition. As Iran's de facto blockade of the Strait of Hormuz continues, the UK is hosting virtual talks with about 40 countries to discuss strategies to reopen the waterway, through which 20% of the world's oil and LNG supplies are shipped from Gulf producers in peacetime. Now, the Russians, the Strait is open to them. The Strait is open to a number of nations. If they're willing to transact in yuan, that's one thing. And if they're not allied with the United States and Israel, that's the other thing. And coinciding with that, is a number of European nations saying, including Italy and Spain and others, putting up resistance to the United States using their air bases and using their airspace to launch offensive actions against Iran. That's probably the most tangible, concrete step that any nation can take to accessing the oil that's coming out of the Persian Gulf. And meanwhile, Trump is on the record as saying, go get your own oil. I mean, they've made a mess of the Middle East. They've made a mess of the global economy. The Israeli Americans have really done a number. And now Trump, in a temper tantrum, is saying that NATO doesn't want to come and rescue him and his disastrous involvement in this conflict at the behest of Israel, and they should go get their own oil. Well, the easiest way to go get their own oil is to simply refuse to participate in any way with U.S. forces. And indeed, they'd be doing a favor to the American people if they did that. Because remember, during the campaign and during the early part of the presidency, the great promise of the Trump administration was the Don Roe Doctrine. We've talked about it a lot on this channel, how wonderful that idea would be. And that would involve extrication from NATO, extrication from the Ukraine war, extrication from the foreign policy objectives of the Israeli government in the Middle East, pulling the troops back, saving a ton of money, using that money to focus on rebuilding the crippled infrastructure of the United States, rebuilding the American dream at home. That's what Trump promised to do. And now we see this headline: White House seeks $1.5 trillion for defense. A new budget request, $1.5 trillion, is a record number. This is in addition to the emergency funding they've requested to keep the war going. The huge proposed increase would be partly offset by steep cuts to domestic programs, some of which the Trump administration describes as wasteful. The United States needs this money to rebuild bridges here. While they're bombing bridges in Iran, bombing civilian targets, bombing churches, bombing schools, bombing hospitals, bombing water facilities, bombing energy, we're going to see the bombing of the power infrastructure of Iran. And their ability to keep firing ballistic missiles has not been diminished. So there will be a heavy price to pay for the world. The entire world is going to pay the price for this action, which, to me, it just comes out of left field. I don't understand how you can be in MAGA. I don't know how you can identify the things about America First and MAGA that were really positive, not just for the United States and for the world, and somehow just flip your script to accept what is a very clear neocon action driven by Israel, which is shattering the American empire on the rocks of the Zagros Mountains. I mean, they could have just pulled out without war. They could have just let Israel and Iran sort their own issues out. If the United States has all the oil in the world that it needs, according to Trump, which it does, especially now that they have secured for the short and medium term the cooperation of the Venezuelan regime, it's coerced cooperation. A change of government in the United States will end that cooperation. Venezuela does not need to cooperate with a U.S. government that isn't willing to drop the hammer on them. And so, if in November the headwinds materialize and the Democrats controlling the House and the Senate, you'll probably see an end to Venezuelan cooperation with the United States. But if it's true that there's plenty of oil, if it's true that they can get all their oil from Canada or they can get their resources domestically, what the hell are we doing in the Middle East? What's this idea that Iran was somehow this massive security threat to North America? It's just not true. And before the fact checkers in the audience issue another correction for me, they got all kinds of critique for every little detail that I put into my videos, but they have absolutely no ability to criticize or critique the Trump administration, which has contradicted itself every single day. And even before the war started, which has amplified the level of contradiction and lying that we're getting out of the administration, you also have a great big glaring hole when it comes to Epstein, and we're going to watch a little video clip about that next. But this $1.5 trillion, which isn't necessarily a record, that's the correction. It's the biggest in decades, not necessarily a record. I believe I referred to it as record. That $1.5 trillion is desperately needed by Americans. Now, Pam Bondi was fired yesterday. Let's listen to the words of the man who was handpicked by Trump to replace her.
Thank you. You said this is the end of the Epstein, of your review of the Epstein files. So just to clarify, is the public going to learn the identities of the men who abused the girls with the information that you're releasing? And if not, why not? And then I have a quick follow-up.
I mean, you just baked in an assumption into your question that I have never said and I don't know to be true. Is the public going to learn about men that abused these girls? Like, what does that mean? I mean, I don't understand what that means.
Well, I mean, they're the men who abused the young women through Epstein's.
We said in July, and it remains as true today as it was in July. If we had information, we meaning the Department of Justice, about men who abused women, we would prosecute them, right?
They're lying. The Trump administration is covering the whole thing up. Nobody has been charged. We know the names of the men who did the abuse, and some women as well. And nothing is happening to them, and it's all because of the administration. I find it incredibly disconcerting how slow many, even in my own community, are to wake up to the reality of what a disaster this Iranian war effort actually is. We're just going to go through some headlines rapid fire so I can create a shorter video because people were complaining yesterday's video was too long. Three total generals fired today. This is yesterday. They are refusing to put troops in Iran. Now, Ethan is making a guess, but it's a pretty solid guess. The Pentagon didn't want to get involved in this. The generals didn't want to get involved in this. This was a political decision to go to war in Iran and start down the path to committing war crimes. You got to listen to some of the language. We'll get to that. But these are generals who are probably saying we're not going to obey those orders. Now, Ray Gunn down here says, they can't refuse an order from the commander-in-chief. Luckily, they were fired instead of tried and sent to Leavenworth for insubordination and failure to follow a lawful order. The comment is getting ratioed because Ray Gunn is wrong. They don't swear a personal oath of fealty like they did with Hitler in Germany. They swear an oath to the Constitution of the United States. And if the Constitution is being fundamentally violated by an order of government, it is the military's duty to refuse that order. And so you're in the midst of a purge. Now, the language of the U.S. administration might be said to just be getting stronger to try and signal strength to the world. But when you're bragging about actual legitimate war crimes, I think people should start paying attention, especially when the United States does not have the money to do this on behalf of a nation of 9 million in a war that they don't need. Let's have a listen.
We're going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong.
We'll hit some bridges. We've got a couple of nice bridges in mind. But if they come to the table, that'll be good. But it doesn't matter whether they come or not. We've set them back. It'll take 15 to 20 years for them to rebuild what we've done to them.
No stupid rules of engagement, no nation-building quagmire, no democracy-building exercise, no politically correct wars. We fight to win, and we don't waste time.
Do you not understand that something's gone off the Trump administration? During the negotiations, the Iranians agreed to give up their entire nuclear missile program, all of the enriched uranium that they had. Meanwhile, we're not even talking about disarming the Israelis of their nuclear weapons, or the Pakistanis for that matter, for those who say the Islamic Republic. We can't allow the Muslims to have nuclear weapons. They've already got them. It's absurd. All the talking points are absurd. They're illogical. But something Trump said was, they better come to the table soon. Iran's ex-foreign minister Karzai, gravely wounded in an attack on his home, apparent assassination attempt comes as Iran's army pledges to fight back until the U.S.-Israel face permanent surrender. Anybody that tries to talk to the U.S. administration, anybody that sticks their head up and tries to come to the table, the Israelis kill, because the Israelis don't want the United States getting out of this war. At the same time, you now have three carriers that are going to be operational. You have 13,000 troops, probably more en route, that are going to get involved in some ill-fated ground operation. I'm putting that out at the outset. I'm convinced it's going to happen. I'm convinced it's going to be a disaster. Would be pleasantly surprised if I was completely wrong. And I feel, you know, I've got American friends who have kids, 18, 20, 22 years old, that are in the service. They're so worried right now. And those kids are demoralized because they know they shouldn't be there. And it's pretty bad when a lot of troops are going into the war, going into their deployment, I should say, and they're already feeling defeated. No one wants this. The only people who want this are the Trump administration. It doesn't even make sense to the generals. That's why they're all getting sacked. Fuel rationing warning is all possibility studied in Iran war crisis. This is a crisis that was triggered by the Israeli Americans. They are the primary people to blame. The Iranian retaliations and actions, while bad themselves, are secondary knock-on consequences of the decision to go to war in the first place. Trump heralds regime change, but Iran's leaders remain hardliners. He says the regime is gone. He says all their leaders are dead, except the regime is functioning. The government is functioning. They're firing withering, blistering salvos of ballistic missiles every single day on multiple countries in the region. They're showing no signs of slowing down. And the regime itself is getting more and more hardline with every single bomb that falls. You start bombing civilian infrastructure, you start bombing the energy infrastructure, you hit their water sources and desalinization plants. Sure, they only get 7% of their water from those sources, but 7% of 90 million is still a lot of people. Do the math on that yourself. It's incredible. Exclusive. U.S. intelligence assesses Iran maintains significant missile launching capability, sources say. We didn't need sources to say that. We don't need media reports to say that. We can see the truth of our eyes. In spite of all the censorship, you can see the missiles falling down on Middle Eastern heads, on Israeli heads every single day. Iran is not defeated. They shot down, likely an F-15 today, and the Americans are scrambling to try and find the pilot. Maybe by the time it's uploaded, they'll have found that pilot and rescued him. They got helicopters, which I highlighted earlier, being shot at. U.S. government requests for social media user data are soaring, so that deep state, that totalitarian intelligence mindset, is being deployed at ever-increasing levels by the Trump administration, who campaigned on ending these sorts of practices. The casualty cover-up. The Pentagon is hiding U.S. losses under Trump in the Middle East. The Pentagon has sent outdated statements on the number of U.S. troops killed or wounded during the Iran war, resulting in undercounts. I've said this all along. They're not telling us the truth about how many are dead and wounded. When 13 U.S. bases in the Middle East are completely abandoned and they're hiding those troops in the hotel and they're doing remote work as if you can remote work a war, that's something. That indicates how much trouble you're in. You got satellite imagery showing the radar stations blown up. The Israeli early warning systems are completely blind because the Iranians, being combat effective, have managed to blind them. And now they're looking at sending Marines into this disaster to try and salvage it. Like, it's just, I wish people would wake up. Iran war live, American fighter jet downed over Iran. We already covered that. Trump says a little more time needed to open the Strait of Hormuz. The 24 to 48 hour war enthusiasts have got to just be feeling it by now as we are well into the second month of the war. A little more time is just like 2 weeks to flatten the curve. 2 weeks to flatten the curve turned into, what, a year and a half, 2 years? Iran's ex-foreign minister Karazi gravely wounded in an attack on his home. We covered that already. On April 1st, this is the Russian embassy. On April 1st, two strikes were conducted near the St. Nicholas Orthodox Church in Tehran, main building. Almshouse and several technical facilities were damaged. No victims, no one was killed. But this is just, you have to wonder how long the Russians and the Chinese just sit on the sidelines and watch their strategic partner and ally get bombed into oblivion. Because, you know, people mistakenly say this in the comment section that I'm somehow arguing that Iran is not suffering damage. They're getting hit hard. Some of what Trump says about them being set back 10 to 15 years, it's going to take them a long time to rebuild after what the Americans destroyed. And for what? Why are they being destroyed? For nuclear weapons that didn't exist? I know there's probably people in their 30s that are watching this that don't remember 2003. When we were fed the same lies about the Iraqis. And look at the disaster of that. The Iraqi government is not exactly friendly to the United States after trillions of dollars being spent and untold lives lost. You know, and people say, they bring up that 30,000 or 40,000 fake number. It was more like 7,000, according to the human rights organizations that oppose the Iranian government, of people that were killed during the protests, which were fomented. I remember being lambasted in my comments section about saying that the CIA and Mossad was involved, that those protests were inorganic. Turns out they were inorganic. Turns out I was right about that. Not just me, anybody that was telling the truth, that they were motivated by intelligence. That 30 to 40,000 number is fake, but 7,000 is bad enough on its own. But it pales in comparison to the number of people the United States has killed in foreign countries over the same 49 years that we're told the Iranians have been repressing the world and destroying people. How many millions of people has the United States killed, directly or indirectly, in the last 49 years? How many people died in Iraq? How many people died in Syria? How many people died in Libya after the chaos the Americans and NATO left behind after they killed Gaddafi because he dared have an independent mind? Can we get real about the consequences of empire? It's nuts. Hegseth Oates, Army Chief, we've already covered that. IRGC claims to have attacked Dubai Oracle data center. U.S. jets at Jordan's Al-Azraq airbase. They might have downed an F-15 today, but they've already hit AWACS. They're knocking Reaper drones out of the sky. Trump keeps saying that they have total dominance of the skies over Iran and can do whatever they want, but they're still using standoff munitions. When they send F-15s in, they have a chance of getting shot down. The Reaper drones are getting shot down. The Americans don't have an unlimited supply of these things, and they're very technically sophisticated. One loss of an AWACS is a massive blow to U.S. command and control operations. And I got to wonder, like, how long is it going to take? We're at day 34, 35, 33, whatever the hell day we're on. For people to admit that the United States, with all its lives and treasure, is walking headlong into a disaster, and they're not doing it for their own national interest. The United States' national interest, the people of the United States, the concept of America first, the concept of the Donroe Doctrine, the North American fortress, the idea of hemispheric dominance, is not served by smashing the empire on the rocks of the Zagros. How many days have to go by, how much disaster has to unfold before the rest of MAGA and America First wakes up? I mean, you've lost Alex Jones. Nick Fuentes is calling for everybody to vote Democrat just to get them out. His logic, I mean, I follow his logic. When you're in power, when politicians have a president, or in Canada when there's a prime minister, the tendency is to circle the wagon, not take out the head. Because Alex Jones is calling for the 25th Amendment. You got to get Trump out of there. We got to rally behind someone else and, you know, carry the football forward. It's not going to happen because he's the president. It's not going to happen because they were on the winning team during the last election. I don't know what the solution is here, but it's definitely, I can tell you this, at the bottom of the barrel of solutions, you're going to find that supporting Trump and supporting the cult of personality is not the answer. You have to. Let me finish this way. If you're true friends with somebody, you don't tell them what they want to hear. You give them the difficult news. That's what I'm doing here. That's what many people, many Trump supporters even, are trying to do. They're trying to give their friends the truth, the bad news, rather than the reassuring pat on the head. We don't need more of that. There has to be an end to this. Even if it involves taking the loss.